Well, here we are, the commencement of a long-running or long-planned podcast, the Two Ordinary Coppers. Schiltzy, what's your thoughts?
Well, mate, there's going to be some exciting times on this podcast here, I think. We've got a few stories to tell and also, you know, give a bit of insight into policing, a bit of background, a bit behind the scenes.
Yeah, so to put it in perspective, the birth of this little idea was that Ben Schiltz and I, between us, 25 years experience in the Northern Territory Police, and can and will tell a story. So sitting around having a beer with people, it was basically told to us that we do tell a story well and that people might be willing to listen to it. So for what it's worth, we're certainly nothing special, hence the name of the podcast, Two Ordinary or Very Ordinary Coppers, as we like to put it.
Definitely.
To introduce ourselves, my name's Damien Barb. I finished with the Northern Territory Police in 2021, having joined in 2007. I worked in Darwin, Katherine, Tennant Creek, Alice Springs and Borroloola, as well as many relief locations through the Northern Command, which is all of Arnhem Land and the western area of the top end of the NT, as well as quite a few of the stations in the Barkly region. Schiltzy?
Mate, I started at the same time. We actually met at on our training day. We had to do your testing to get into the police force.
Testing before we started, yeah.
So that was 2006 at the UQ here in Brisbane. And then we, of course, met when we joined in 2007, and we did our training, went to Katherine first. We did 6 years. I did 6 years in Katherine, and in that time, I know both of us actually relieved quite a number of stations. Like, I did Largemona, Kalkaringi, Maramboy, Ramangini, Croker Island or Minjalang, Warrawee, Manangreta. Plenty of stations to name, and then basically I went from there and I took over the intervention station of Ramangini. I did that for 3 years and then I went to Borroloola. I went to actually meet out with you and have some fun, but you moved on. I went down to Alice Springs because you just like the excitement, I think. Then I finished up in Borroloola and I left in 2017.
Yep. So an interesting story. When we first started at the college, we recognised each other from our selection day in Brisbane. The recognition was there, so we shook hands. Hello, Ben, Damien, yeah, how are you going? And I said, so where are you from? And he goes, Toowoomba. I said, I'm from Toowoomba. And he goes, Mum and Dad still live there. They're just out of Toowoomba, a little place called Gowrie Junction.
Yeah.
And we're looking at you going, bullshit. And anyway, it turns out that our parents were 400 metres apart, 2,500 kilometres away. So that was that sort of kicked off a bit of a laugh, and we reported that back up. And I think the way we can structure this is we might go through a bit of a chronology of some of the funny things that happened through training.
Definitely.
And we can talk through a few things there. The intention of this podcast is not, we're not too worried about offence, it's not so much that. It's just about the day-to-day life of policing. What we want to do is humanise the police force a bit. I know that a lot of people's involvement with police is getting a speeding ticket on the side of the road and leaving with a bit of a bad taste. That's part of the job, but it's not part I particularly enjoyed, and it's certainly a very small part of the actual job for police, but it seems to be what the vast majority of law-abiding people think policing is.
Yep.
So I think the intention, and for however long the podcast goes on, we want to tell some funny things that occurred, and every day is a laugh. If you can't laugh in the police force, then you need to get another job, because you won't survive.
That's true.
There's some stories that'll make you angry, there's stories that'll make you cry. And we sort of hope that everything in between. But if we start off with some stories from the college, I think we started early on, and straight away we formed a bit of a mateship there, and we were lucky. We had quite a good squad, I thought.
We did have a very good squad.
We were squad 91 of 2007.
Yep.
I believe there's still a good number of people still serving, so nearly 17 years down the track.
Yep.
We very quickly formed a crew that was well known for being fun-loving, let's say.
Definitely. I do recall when we actually started, the sergeants telling us that they scraped the bottom of the barrel to get us.
They had, I think the actual term was they had to tip the barrel over and scrape the dirt underneath it. So that was how we started off. Our training days were quite good. Police training is what it is. It's people think it's all about teaching, arresting people, and that's about it. Well, that's a very small component of the job. I mean, the first, was it six, eight weeks?
Yeah, but you're basically, or for even 3 months, like you're basically learning legislation like a lawyer does in 3 years.
So yeah, you are getting a crash course in legislation, and any police listening who've been through police academies will understand that it's basically death by PowerPoint. There's no other way to really do it. It's weekly exams on law. It's PT every morning, mixed in with a few things, a few different presentations that vary off legislation. But basically, you need to prove yourself very early on with the academic ability with legislation. That's tied in with a few good nights out on the town on Mitchell Street, Darwin.
Yeah, one or two.
One or two of them.
Well, I mean, if you actually look back at the police force, and Damo and I apparently were the biggest drinkers for some reason, but the only reason people thought that, we had some of our crew used to go into town and, you know, drink it up and party in town. Damo and I'd sit outside his little donga there and we'd drink beer. So everybody drove past and we'd have like probably, what, six every evening not even all that. But people saw us because we're actually out, you know, in the open.
Quite often reading legislation. Yep. and I believe at one point the then deputy commissioner may have asked the question of the command through the college, what are you actually teaching these people? They seem to be doing a lot of drinking outside the barracks. And a bit of that went on.
Well, we also, mate, this is probably where we can tell a good story here because... When we first joined and they said, oh, look, there's a police club, you know, at the PMC. And so, you know, it's not a good look for recruits to go up to this police club. And anyway, Damon and I, the first Friday, rocks around with them. Well, you know, let's just go and give it a go. And I reckon that was a cracker night. And that's where we met.
Yeah, we met a bit of a legend within the NT Police, retired now, the now retired Superintendent Bob Rennie. Anyone from the Northern Territory who's spent any amount of time in the job will know Bob, and he is an absolute legend of the job, and I know that he wouldn't mind us naming him.
No.
Because what he taught us was that the whole idea of the police force is that you need to be a team.
Yep.
You need to pull your team together. You are going to experience things on a day-to-day basis that are going to cause trauma, and that trauma needs to be, you need to be normalized in your brain function by the time you get home to your family. And he said, a police club is not about sitting around and getting blistered drunk and medicating yourself with alcohol. He says, yes, we do have a beer.
Yep.
But he said, the biggest thing here is there's no rank in the police club. You come up there, you have a chat with people, you get to know some sergeants, get to know some detectives, get to know some hierarchy. He was a superintendent at the time.
Yeah. Well, and I'll just butt in there. Sorry, Damo, but how angry did he get us when we called him sir?
Well, that's right.
You know, he said, there's no rank here. You call me Bob.
I'm Bob. And he was an early inspiration into, this is what it is. Guys, this is a tough job. Not everyone can do this. And, he was the one who sort of planted that seed. And I think in future future episodes of this, we will go on to how we then, as sort of more senior members down the track, pulled teams together through times of trauma.
Yep.
And yes, alcohol was involved. I think that the having a few beers after a day at work is far healthier than suffering raging PTSD. Well,
definitely. I'll throw in there, like, you know, there is this perception that the police club was somewhere where people just go and get blessed, you know, they drink and try and forget everything. But it's not about that. It's actually about bringing your crew together. Mm. It's about also offloading what's happened in the shift before to people that understand.
Yeah.
So they don't go home to their wives, husbands, you know, kids, and actually offload there. Yeah. What you do is you get it out of your system and you talk to like-minded people. It's a debrief.
Absolutely.
And you know, I think there can be a lot said since they've taken those police clubs away. You know, mental health has actually gotten worse in the police force because you don't have that camaraderie.
I couldn't agree more. And that sense of team and the bonding, the normalisation of those experiences and really getting to bond with your crew. And I know there's different trains of thought on that from ethical standards points of view, and we'll cover off on that through the life of this podcast. But basically, we need to understand that, in our opinions anyway, for what they're worth, the police club was an important part. And I think it's good to know that started at the college for us. We were introduced early on, and it normalised a lot of what we were going through at the college, which was, the training was tough.
Yep.
It was what it was. I think we were touching on legislation, but we might move through as sort of after that first 3 months in the college.
That's when the fun really began, all, fun especially does. My specialty, because, you know, I wasn't the best at actually doing all the written stuff. Damo, like, you know, he had a photographic mind. He could have a beer, read through something, and then get, like, straight A's.
Oh, I was hardly the ducks.
And, you know, I had to put probably about 100 times the amount of effort in, but, you know, we did get through that. But of course, I'm more of a practical person, and as soon as we hit the driver training, the firearms and the defensive tactics.
Yep.
And you want to tell us a bit about those, Damo?
Yeah, so I think once you move, there's a sense of achievement once you've moved through that first, and this would be to any young recruits going through police training now. We all went through that. It was like, man, I joined the police to have, this is meant to be exciting and adrenaline, and I feel like a law student. And once we hit that, those practical blocks, those skills blocks, so going through your driver training, that's where you really got into the nuts and bolts of it. That's where you started to do the practical application of that legislation. And so driver training wasn't just getting in a Falcon and tearing around as the Hidden Valley racetrack as fast as you could, although that did occur.
It did.
It was knowing the legislation about what you can do, knowing the policy, knowing the general orders, and then applying those general orders in settings such as emergency vehicle driving and pursuit training and things like that. And I think once we got to see that the complexity of those and the requirement
practical application,
to step back,
yeah.
So the driver training was the best fun I had with my pants on.
Yeah, yeah.
It was excellent, highly recommended. And do enjoy that as you go through your training. Well,
and like the first times I went license siren, so the sergeant sitting beside you, I was in the Hilux, the two-wheel drive Hilux, and of course, you know, he goes, okay, you're now emergency vehicle, you know, speed at your discretion, blah, blah, blah. And like, you know, it's funny, like, you just get this adrenaline jump, you go, wow, I can do whatever the hell I want now. Mm. So, and I was flogging it. This thing was bouncing off the rev limiter, and I'm going into Darwin in a, like a 60k zone, and I'm doing 150. And I'm just like, cars are like star pickets, I'm going past them. Anyway, I pulled up, sergeant was good, he was, you know, I drove in, I probably did it for about 5-10 minutes. Anyway, I pulled up and he turns to me and he goes, right, do you think you can justify that? And he goes, somebody stepped out there, yeah, they would have been dead.
Yeah.
And he goes, that's on you. And that was how they trained us. And it was good because he actually let me go. And, of course, he was watching to make sure it was safe. And, you know, he would have pulled me up if didn't. But it was a good way to, I suppose, break it in or get you the realisation that, yeah, is that safe? Is it safe doing that speed, you know, in that sort of built-up area?
And that's it. I think it was, the training was, you can go in as a junior entry and not have a clue what policing's all about. And you realise very quickly that, yeah, sure, you're going to do things here that the average citizen can't do. But the level of scrutiny, the level of accountability, you've got to justify everything you're doing, that's not understood by the greater population.
No.
I think there's a sense of lawlessness within the police, and that couldn't be further from the truth.
Yep.
You're under that scrutiny. You're held to the highest level of account.
Yep.
However, you're still expected to carry out those tasks. You're still expected to drive quickly to a matter.
Mm.
During a pursuit, where the pursuit can be justified, you do have to get the vehicle to perform, and you do need to try and maintain that contact with the target vehicle.
Yep.
So that training was excellent and was very quickly put into practice. And we will obviously talk more about the operational side of things once we got out on the road.
But, I'll just touch on something there, how you said we are held accountable. Yes. So what happens is if something goes wrong in an incident, we're judged in hindsight.
Absolutely.
So, you know, like we've got sometimes split seconds to make a decision, and then they sit there and go through it all and go, why didn't you do this? Because I had like half a second to think about it.
Yep.
And it's important, like, and I know you, and I did, definitely. Like, we got investigated. Somebody puts a complaint in, we get investigated. We get hauled over the coals, people get brought in, they, you know, talk to witnesses. Mm. We've been investigated a number of times ourselves just from people putting complaints in.
Yep.
And, you know, obviously we continue through the force because they were unfounded. Or, you know, because the people do lie. We're not locking up the most... you know, the most honest people in the world.
You don't come to police attention generally because you're a good person.
No, that's right.
Or not necessarily a good person, not because you're necessarily doing the correct thing.
That's right.
So there's a bit of that going on. But yeah, back to the training side of things, the firearms training I found quite good. It was obviously that we talk about accountability and responsibility. You're training us to use those firearms because they're something that can and will save your or someone else's life. But as we saw in November 2019, that comes with an extreme burden.
Definitely.
And the need, and we'll go on to other times. I've certainly drawn my firearm. I've come close on one occasion. I came close. on a number of other occasions I thought it may have ended the way that it, with a lethal force use, that never did occur. But that level of accountability, and it must be that way. You don't want to live in a world where people have got a license to kill. But you do walk around the street with that gun on your hip, and that may be required to be drawn. I know that the vast majority of people in non-police would not comprehend a situation where someone is using lethal force against you, or potentially lethal force in a situation that you're around, and you have to deal with that. You are the police. There's no one else to call.
Yep.
So the training that we received there, sure, was also about the safe use of firearms and the practical use of them, and the ability to build repetition and drills and actually become a skilled user of a number of different firearms.
Yeah, I mean, you basically, your fingers are raw by the end of firearms training, because you're doing the same thing over and over again, and it's muscle memory, or what they call muscle memory, it's repetition.
Yeah, and the loading thousands of rounds into magazines, although these are, it is what it is, these things we go through, and I think the best part of it for me was that every time we started off, it was that, right, hey, let's go through section 128.
Yep.
So the sections that we're reading out are legislation under the Criminal Code Act of the Northern Territory that justify the use of lethal force.
Yep.
So that was where the bulk of firearms training was centred.
Yeah.
Around that need to understand, why is it that we're allowed to carry these firearms? What happens if we're in a situation where, you know, God forbid, we do have to draw that firearm and use it?
Correct me if I'm wrong here, Damo. It was the, definitely 128, but was it 128, 28?
128.
So 127, 128, 129 was about actually the use of force and justification and excuse, if I actually get that right. Because I remember there was 29. Three parts. We had to, and for the firearms training, you're right, we actually had to do verbatim. It was a page and a half, and we, every and, or, comma, had to be in there.
Yep, absolutely.
And, that was probably one of the hardest ones, because if you didn't get it right, you failed that part, and that part was probably worth about half the marks on that particular exam.
It is section 27, 28, and 29.
Oh!
Well done.
Jeez, I'm good.
Well done. It's only been 17 years. Well done.
They obviously drummed it into us.
I hammered it in. I mustn't listen. So you're moving on through the college. Obviously, we formed some excellent friendships. You move through those skills blocks, and then you move into the more scenario-based training towards the end, which we didn't do a lot of, but we did do enough. I think, and you'll agree with me here, that once those scenarios started kicking off, and for those who haven't really been involved in this sort of thing, the scenario training is you are paired up with one of your colleagues or one of your fellow recruits, and you're put into, we had a training house inside one of the buildings at the police college, and you basically are dispatched. You're a police officer on duty, and you're going to these jobs, and your response is incorporating all of your training, all of your knowledge of your powers, all of your skills, your skill sets, your skill blocks, I should say, to actually perform the role of a police officer. And that kind of thing culminated in the collation, I suppose, of a prosecution brief. So, well, we see prosecution file, but they're more well known around Australia as a brief of evidence to put a matter before the court. And I think you'll agree with me, we did one.
Yep.
In the 6 months in the college, we did one brief. In my first shift, I did three.
Yeah, that's right.
So we were made out, and think of a brief, for those who haven't done one, as a very large a university assignment.
Basically, yeah.
So there's quite a bit of work to it.
And there's an order, and like it's not like simply putting a whole lot of A4 pages together.
No.
It's about printing out, putting in an order, and it has to actually go in that order.
That's
and
right.
I mean, you know, how long's a precy normally? And for those that don't understand, or they were later called statement of facts.
Statement of facts. So calling it a precy has showed your dinosaur.
Oh, yeah.
Statement of facts. The putting together a prosecution files was something that it comes. You need to learn to do that over time.
Yes.
It's one of those things. The first file you'll put together, your shift sergeant on your first shift is going to look sideways at you and throw that thing back at you covered in red pen. And for anyone who's a probationary constable right now feeling that, guess what? You're not the first.
Yeah.
You won't be the last. Learn from it. I can tell you now, I finished my career as a detective acting senior sergeant, and even at that level, I was still handing documents off to other people to read, and they were handing it back going, is that how you spell this?
Yeah.
So don't ever, remove your ego.
Exactly.
Learn how to do it. don't think you're the first person to be criticised for, and it's not even criticism, it's just...
It's learning the job and learning to do it
that's
well.
That's right. Yep.
It's like I was mentioning it, I think this morning, and I said, like, every time I came into the shift, especially when I first joined, like, you'd actually start the shift and you just wait for the shift sergeant to call you in and haul you about a, you know, a file. Like, this isn't acceptable, you got to do this and all. And, but that's how you learn.
That's right.
And like you said, you've got to swallow your pride, go, yes, I'm just learning.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm basically a shit kicker.
Yep.
And I've got to learn and I've got to, you know, listen to, I suppose, the experienced officers.
So I think down the track, obviously we're going to go into the operational side of things, but I thought it was good to kick off the foundation of where we came from. I know that, you know, with 15 years in the job, some of the most memorable experiences are always the first ones, because it's all new, it's all shiny, yeah, it's all exciting. And to me, and especially Schiltsy and I being squad mates and then moving through and having quite a bit of operational experience in the police force itself, we still look back at those college days and just smile.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they were good times. We met really good people. There was no one on my squad I didn't like.
No.
It was a great, crew.
Really good crew.
To this point, there's nobody on the squad I don't like. We all got along, and to this day, we all get along.
And we're close. We're like a family.
Absolutely. And so what are we? 2027 will be 20 years since that crew graduated. And I guarantee you that I can't think of the exact number. There's nearly 10 still serving.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and you know.
And there was, 27?
I think 28.
28.
It started, yeah.
Yep.
So, I think what the goal is with this podcast is we're going to move through, and I think we can talk about, in the next podcast, it may be that we talk about our first days on the job.
Yep.
So, and that might be information that might just provide a little bit of normalcy to a junior police officer now who's started, and it doesn't matter what jurisdiction, in Australia or New Zealand, any first world country, basically. You're going to feel the exact same stress, that same pressure. It's like, yep, oh my God, it's us.
Well,
that uniform's, you know, real.
And we'll talk about the things like having a firearm on your hip and going out in public.
Yeah.
It's one of the most scariest things I ever did to start with.
Absolutely.
We'll go through also, and as we progress through the police, about, you know, the challenges and the mental health and all that sort of stuff. We really want to try and push that sort of stuff so people understand, you know, that when you actually see a police officer, you don't know what they've done for the last 5 years or even that day.
Yep,
you know,
exactly right.
We'd like to, you know, I suppose, so you actually sit there and think, oh, maybe we need to give this copper a break.
Yep. And that's an important part. We'll certainly touch on a lot of things there. The idea of this podcast is we want to make you laugh, we want to make you cry, we want to make you cranky, basically put you through the spectrum of the emotions that can be felt. We want to bring some humanity, I suppose, to the police force.
Yeah.
Instead of seeing a uniform, you see Ben and Damo.
That's right.
Now that we're out of the police, I still look back and I'm a proud member of the New South Wales Rural Fire Service these days. And I attended a motor vehicle accident recently for much less pay than I'm used to back in the old days. But the police officers turned up afterwards and we were out in the middle of nowhere. In northern New South Wales, it's all relative because certainly middle of the nowhere in Northern Territory means something a lot different to that.
Yep.
And I just remember thinking how young the police look, but then they were my age when I joined, so I would have looked exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah, so that's exactly right.
We want to bring a human face to the police force and not just the Northern Territory. I think we can talk about some things that happened in the NT, talk about some of the extreme work rate.
Yes.
Places like Alice Springs, I've never felt so overwhelmed as I have doing night shift in Alice Springs. The weight of the world is on your shoulders. So I think that's the plan. Hopefully it will provide some entertainment. We'll certainly provide some. I genuinely hope that we do provide a few laughs.
Yep.
I'm sure we will.
Oh, yeah. We were known as not only the two biggest drinkers, but actually we were known as two of the funniest or happiest cops in the police force. And we had that reputation for pretty much our entire time there.
And that's it. And I've got a saying I like. It's a little bit crude, but you could shovel shit out of a hole if you're doing it with a good crew. It's not a bad job.
No, that's exactly right.
So, and if there's a good sense of humour there, I find humour overcomes most things.
Definitely. And like, just to add to that, you've hit the nail on the head there, because working with you, didn't matter what happened. You know, you could have a plane explode with bodies raining down and you'd sit there and go, okay, we're going to deal with this in a professional manner.
But you weren't there for that job.
No.
So I think that's not a bad way to start off.
Yep.
We might go through a pilot and we'll put some more things together. And what we want to do is just see if we can get a followership and see who wants to listen to this sort of thing. We're happy to tell stories till the cows come home. I think we do it naturally.
Yep.
And, yeah, we'll go from there.
We'll also put in there, there's a number of people that actually wanted us to do this podcast and, you know, get it up and running because they do love hearing the stories that we have to tell. And also, you know, if you listen to this, just click on, go to our website. And if you've got a question, ask it. We're more than happy to talk about it.
Absolutely. All right, we'll see you at the next one.
Yep. See ya.